Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today is Tuesday, January 14th, 2014. My name is Sally Baptist. Thank you for tuning in tonight. Thank you for tuning in to our weekly edition of American Freedom Watch Radio with Karen Schoen and John Estabrook. And I'm going to give a couple of little updates here first, and then I will hand it over to Karen, and we'll get started. The first thing I want to mention, just in case you didn't hear it on some of the other shows, starting this Thursday for this year, for the 2014 election year, we're going to focus on interviewing candidates on Thursday. Sherry Smart, who is excellent at doing this and has lined up some people to some candidates for us to talk to and learn about, she's going to be the host, and I will be the co-host. So, and Neil Rice will also be out there. So just make a note, come Thursday. Make sure you check out Thursday shows. If you can listen live and call in and ask questions, that's good. If you don't get to listen to it live, definitely listen to the archives, because we're going to have in-depth discussions with no commercials, and we want the truth. You know, we want you to be able to make the best decision in that ballot box, so we're going to ask the question, the tough questions. And speaking of the truth, we really have to make this year, you know, it's always been important, but things are just getting declining in our country, and if we don't change our ways, we're just not going to save this country. So I, as I said, part of my resolution is to seek the truth, face the truth, and then we can save America. And I truly do believe that. It's like, stop watching the lamestream media and go out there and seek the truth. Look for more than one comment on what one person says. Don't just take everything you hear off of the TV, regardless of what cable news or whatever it is you're listening to. Seek the truth. Once you find the truth, you have got to face it. If we do not face the truth, we do not face the problems, we can't solve them. So seek the truth, face the truth, and then we can save America. The only other couple of rants, if you want to call them that, for tonight is locally here, the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority here in Orlando, Florida. Culture of corruption always has been. It continues to be more culture of corruption or corruption going on as we speak. And I am putting the word out there to Florida representatives and senators. We need citizen oversight boards for these expressway authorities, and we need for everything to do with transportation. So we're going to have a special show talking about transportation and these citizen oversight boards, but we truly need them to shut down this corruption. These people will never clean their own acts up. And because they are quasi-agencies, governmental agencies kind of thing, they don't answer to anybody but the governor. Rick Scott puts these people on these boards who know he knows are going to do what he wants them to do, and they're not accountable to the local citizenry. So we've got to change that, and we're going to have a big discussion. And, Karen, I know I sent you some information on that too, so we've really got to get into that piece of it. And then I'll also be getting into, maybe on Monday's show, can you believe the NFL, NBA, and many other sports are considered nonprofits and don't pay tax? It's unbelievable to me. So anyway, those are kind of like my rants for right now. I've got a whole list of things, but this is American Freedom Watch Radio show tonight, so I better go ahead and hand this over to Karen so she can get started before I do go on a true rant.
Well, thank you so much, Sally. You just are terrific, and I really enjoy your rants because they are needed. And right now my rant head is over the top with these just egregious, ridiculous, disgraceful lies. It is just inconscionable that the Americans, remember that, folks, Americans are allowing this to happen, and we are.
Yeah.
It's our fault. We're allowing it. On that note, welcome, everyone. You're listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman. Please also listen on Red State Talk Radio Wednesday at 12 afternoon and Sunday at 12 in the evening. Please share these broadcasts with your friends. You will find valuable information that the mainstream media, oh my God, I can't even say that, lamestream media is talking about, because they are not talking about anything with substance, that is for sure. And on that note, Sally, I just, before listening to Neil Cavuto, who is doing an investigation on our favorite topic, the Transportation Department, the DOT. He wants to know where the money went. Well, you know what, Sally? You ought to go read the DOT website, because they are dedicated to sustainability. Isn't that nice? Now we know where our money is going. Neil, let's work up, and let's everyone tell Neil we know where the money is going. It's going into and walking trails and conservation and everything else except what it should be going to, which is called a highway. What a surprise. The lies are just spewing and spewing and spewing. It's almost like you don't even know where to turn anymore. Where can you go that's the administration that Congress is not lying? And they do it so nicely with such a sweet, straight face, you couldn't even... Sometimes somebody came over to me today when I was at a meeting and said, do these people know what's going on? And you know what I thought about that? And I think they do. I just think that they are... I can't imagine that anybody could be that stupid that would go to
denial.
Well, it could be denial, but then it means they know what's going on and they refuse to investigate what's going on. And that in itself is a huge huge red mark in their face as far as I am concerned. But I would like everybody who tunes into our show today, tomorrow, send Neil Cavuto a tweet that says, read the transportation website. They will tell you where they are spending our money. They are not spending it on things that we need. Did you know that we are giving billions of dollars to Kenya to help their infrastructure?
It's the same thing all over again. We got our troops all over the world, but we can't defend our own borders. We're sending money to build highways for everybody else. We can't fix our own. Does somebody see something slightly backwards here?
Oh, my God. Well, that, I guess, is what redistribution means. Robs from the poor to give to the rich so they can give back just a little bit to the poor and it won't hurt. I can't see how these programs work. So they take our money, they put it in, print it, put it in Wall Street. Everybody makes lots and lots of money. And then they give us back a little bit because we're so needy. Isn't that nice? Just
yeah,
a little bit. And now wonderful legislators cannot understand why adding 20 million more people to the unemployment rolls is not a good thing.
I can't figure that one out either.
It's like, you know, you feel, I told you, I feel like one of those punching dolls. You punch it,
right,
and it pops right up, and then you punch it again. So we have EPA, boom, let me sock you in the face. Okay, you like that sock? Boom, let me sock you in the face with FDA. Let's take a hit with NOAA. Let's take a hit with DOT. Folks, they don't stop. They're not going to stop. You know what came out today? This was one of my favorites, Be Still My Heart. Guess who's writing the regulations for the EPA on the coal plan? Would you be surprised if I said the Sierra Club?
Surprise, surprise.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Have the American people truly lost any sense of having brain cells in there? Are they so absorbed by silly things like sports events, which are, by the way, tax-free, NFL, that just gets to me, a non-profit. Yeah, pro sports are non-profit.
Yeah, right.
But it's like, are they so absorbed by that and American Idol and the superficial stuff? Will we get back to something real in this country at some point? Get rid of all the superficial stuff.
Probably not, because people still use Google, still use Yahoo as a search engine, and boy, do you have to search to find real news.
Yeah.
If you look at the header, every morning I get up and I look at Yahoo on purpose, because I want to see if they actually have a story that has any relevance other than what's who is sleeping with who in Hollywood and who wore this to that function and who cares. Folks, have these Hollywood people ever taken care of you? Have they ever given you a dime? Have they ever said, hey, why don't you come to my house for dinner? Hey, why don't you come with me on a shopping trip? No, and what money do you think they're using to live this lavish lifestyle? Wake up, people. It's your money. If you want to know why you don't have any money in your pocket, well, I got an easy thing. Stop going to the movies. Stop going to the ball games. You can see them on television. What are you playing cable for? Stop going. You want the prices at the stadiums to be lower? Stop going. You want the prices at the movie theaters to be lower? Stop going. It's very simple. Problem is, people don't understand supply, demand, and the free market. There could be a huge supply, and if it's no demand, guess what happens? Do you think a company is going to sit there with all of this stuff on their shelves? No, they're not going to do that. They reduce the price. They create a sale. They give a discount. Why? Because people feel that either A, the product is not worth the price, or the price is too high. The only way to get the message out there is to stop doing it. Nobody's saying boycott. What I'm saying is, if the price is too high, stop paying it. Don't complain. Stop. That's the only way to send the message, because otherwise there is no message. Otherwise, we are going to see America filled with superficial nonsense and garbage that is absolutely meaningless to what is going on in the world today. And what is going on in the world today is horrifying, horrifying. So we're going to talk about some bad news, but then we're going to talk about some good news. The bad news is, I looked at what's going on in Europe. Aside from freezing, which is what is going on, the crime is out of sight. And you know what they're saying, why the crime is so extensive? Because they had to open their countries to anyone. They can't protect their borders. Does that sound familiar?
Gosh, I don't know. Have I heard that before?
I'm scratching my head. Gee, diversity doesn't work. Now, where did I hear that before? Okay, so here we have Europe being riddled with crime, being freezing, and you know what they did in England? They are outlawing seeds. You will have to go to your government to buy seeds, and if you want to have a garden, it's going to have to be registered.
Wow, it's unbelievable, and I'm like, people, wake up, come on. You know, it's there was one thing I was going to mention real quick. You know, going back to what we were talking about with the going to the games and stuff, I really want somebody that's out there listening, I need somebody to explain this to me, because I'm obviously just too dumb to figure this out. I want to know why people drool and they don't have a problem with spending millions and billions on the sports stadiums, welfare for billionaires, multi-million-dollar salaries for these people playing a game, but yet they don't want to. They don't want to spend that kind of time or money on the troops, and they get all upset when non-entertainment corporations do the same thing. You know, you're mad at GE for what they do, which I am, but why aren't you mad over here with the crap that's going on with this so-called entertainment that you can truly live without? I don't understand the logic of why people don't think what they do is so bad, when to me it's even worse, or it's as bad and maybe worse. I don't
Well, today I went to a county commissioner meeting, and I picked up an Agenda 21 book for children. The book was printed and published in 1994. And I opened it up to a section, and it said, now 1994, before I tell you what it said, let's think. If the kids that were reading that book were between the ages of 10 and 15, today they'd be between the ages of 30 and 35. What did the book say? In order to increase revenue, cut the military.
Yeah.
So, if you read it in school, and that's all you hear, and when you get to be an adult, which I'm using that term loosely, when you get to be an adult and you wind up in a government office, and you wind up on the government payroll, and you wind up at the government position, and somebody says, how can we raise more money? You will remember what you read when you were 10 years old, which said, if you want to raise more money, cut the military. And not a surprise when you know what they are telling you in advance. Folks, wake up. I don't know what else to say.
Please wake up.
Please wake up. Please, 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 please. Today was a hugely interesting day. Edward Snowden, and I think he's a hero, released some more information. Guess what he said? The chemtrails. I believe that they are on regular old airplanes. I believe they are mixing aluminum into the fuel, and that's the way the chemtrails are increasing. Chemtrails increasing, isn't that nice? Oh, and Sally, you're going to just love this one. Guess who bought the company that owns the smart meters?
I think I know that one, and I saw it because I think... Oh, God, yeah, Google.
That's right. The spy machine just bought the reason to turn off your appliances. So I can hardly wait.
I was going to say, if the technology, even anything that's called smart by the government or by technology, realize it's invasive and stupid.
Well, I read something the other day which I thought, I even titled my article with that, and it is, if the government has the answer, you're asking the wrong question.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
How true is that? That is absolutely the truth. This is, it is mind-blowing to think that these people are today in Washington making a decision on, A, giving our sovereignty. They're not even thinking about giving our sovereignty to the United Nations. Guess what they're going to do? They're going to fast-track the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now, last week we had Michael and Chris and Tim on, and we were talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And they said, beware, be wary, this is coming. It's going to be coming soon to a town near us. So what does fast track mean? Fast track means that the bill is introduced and discussion on it is minimal. Oh, my goodness, what a surprise. Why are we fast tracking? They don't talk about them anyway. They don't even read them. Why would this be a surprise? Well, the surprise is because the House has to give up our power, and I say our because the house is the people's house. They are our representatives. So the house is going to vote on whether to give more power to Obama. Isn't that nice?
How can it be a question?
It's beyond my comprehension, and yet we have fools sitting up there, and they are debating this issue. Now, if they are stupid enough to pass fast track, what that means is when this bill goes to the Senate to be ratified, instead of having 65 votes, which would be needed as two-thirds of the Senate, of which all treaties must follow that, they would be calling this a partnership, not a treaty, and getting a simple majority of 51 votes. Folks, please pay attention. Please go to the website. Please sign the petition. Please call your legislator tomorrow morning and tell them that fast-tracking anything by giving Obama more power has to be the single stupidest thing that they could ever do, and if they vote yes for it, you will vote no for them because they certainly are not looking out for you. So this is a really, really biggie. Fast track of anything is dangerous and should never be entertained, but fast track of a bill that gives international groups power over the United States Constitution means, even though we are using it minimally right now, it is still there. If this happens, wave goodbye. Wave goodbye to the Constitution, because there will be nothing left of this country. The immigration that will come in to this country will not be believed. And they will be our Asian friends. So then I would suggest we all turn our sights to Europe today and say, oh, crime, oh, drugs, oh, people laying in the street drunk, oh, prostitution, oh, sex trafficking. Come on down, because our arms are open, and we're waiting for you. That's what's going to happen if this fast track goes through. And then to add insult to injury, they're considering amnesty. And Sally, I know you will be so pleased and so happy to know that Governor Rick Scott has appointed a new lieutenant governor who believes in amnesty. Isn't that nice?
And the part that just is so totally amazing is what this idiotic GOP party is doing. And it's like, please, people, leave the GOP and go to the Libertarian Party if you want to be in a party. Personally, just don't be in any of them. But I know the primary situation and all this stuff, the corrupt election piece of it. But you got to abandon what this GOP is doing because they're endorsing Rick Scott. And this is the crap he does. Not to mention the game he's playing with Common Core right now, too.
Well, we did have one itty-bitty tiny win. We'll say a tiny win, but really it's quite a huge win. And that means that Cursive Writing is coming back to Florida. Now, they did not say whether or not it was mandatory. They just said that it was returning. So that probably means that they'll have one class in the bathroom in the basement at 8 o'clock in the morning so that nobody can go, and the kids will learn cursive writing in the basement in the bathroom. But the good news is at least Florida students will be able to sign their name, and Florida students will be able to read the original Constitution and the Bill of Rights and our founding document. Now, chances are they won't be able to understand them, but they will be able to read them. So that was a huge step. The rest of it, put it in the toilet bowl where it belongs, right next to Governor Scott, who is spending all of our money giving it to international corporations in his wonderful free trade zones as he brings in more and more international companies. Now, what exactly does that mean? Well, let's talk about in terms of the way Michael and Chris spoke about it last week. We have taxpayer dollars being funneled into free trade zones under the name of subsidies. We have corporations coming here and not paying anything called tax rebates. They don't have to produce. We're giving. Now, this is our money. We are giving it to an international corporation. What do you think they're going to do with it? You think they're going to put it in an American bank and pay the highest corporate taxes on the planet? I don't think so. I think they're going to take it to their home country out of America, and that is called redistribution. Again, taking American taxpayer dollars, giving it to rich international corporations so that they can take it to their home country. Aren't we lucky? Isn't that a wonderful thing, so that he can get on the air and say, look at me, I created more jobs.
Well, the fact that they're not American jobs or any of that stuff doesn't really matter. And, by the way, your guest is here, so just let me know when you are ready to get going.
Oh, I am ready, ladies and gentlemen. This is absolutely wonderful. I am so proud to introduce Tina Trent, a friend, patriot, and fighter extraordinaire. Welcome, Tina. Thank you for joining tonight.
Hi, Karen. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you. Sally and I have been ranting.
Really?
Really? We're just doing, yeah. Let me see, how can you screw the American people? Let me count the ways.
It really does seem to be coming at us fast and hard these days.
Yes. Well, as we know from our learning all about this and having been involved, when communists feel that they're winning, they dump everything in the pot all at once so they can create as much chaos as possible and then take over in total control, which always eventually leads to totalitarianism, meaning a dictatorship. And I believe that's where we're headed. So they expose themselves and say who they are so they can sit in our Congress and say, look at me, I'm a communist. Look at me, I'm a socialist. Look at me, I'm going to control your life. That's when they think they're winning. Now, we are going to talk tonight on the good side of some of the things that we can do to combat this. Because, folks, when you push back, you win. What a surprise. What a wonderful thing to know. When you stand your ground, you can win. And that's the most important thing that we have to take away from all of this. We are getting success story after success story, and people are beginning to pay attention. And that's great news.
I agree.
So, Tina, you right now are living in Georgia.
I'm living north of Atlanta in Dahlonega, Georgia.
Okay.
And let me tell you something about Dahlonega, Georgia. Where I live, which is between Dawsonville and Dahlonega, the Tea Party is larger than the Republican Party and the Democratic Party put together.
Isn't that wonderful?
Isn't that neat?
Mm-hmm. I had a friend call me today who is running for office in, I think she's in Broward County. And she said she went to the supervisor of elections to get the tax rolls, and she looked at the tax rolls, and in the last 6 months, the Republicans have lost more people, and NPA is becoming larger than both the Democrat and Republican Party. That is fantastic,
especially in
the Communist Republic of Broward County. I live there. I know it.
That's amazing. That's very interesting. But it's scary. I think a lot of people are going to watch what happens, but they're not going to participate until they know what direction things are going in.
Well, that's actually good. I would rather see that than them spending money on these career criminals who think nothing other than stealing their money so that they can go and give it to some third world country to, so that the third world country can grow economically. Whoopee.
I agree.
Not that I have anything against third world countries, but they're third world countries for a reason. And the reason is they have a dictator who steals all their money. So if you really think that we're going to rebuild Kenya's infrastructure or Iraqi's infrastructure or anybody else's infrastructure, wake up. Unless you get rid of the head of the snake, which is the dictators of their countries, nothing is going to change.
Well, I've been, you know, I've been traveling around helping people get organized both in Florida and Georgia, as you know. And I think if there was one message that I want to start out with everybody, it's that we've got to start spending our activist dollars locally.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very strongly that a lot of people, that people are not used to actually supporting their neighbors and people they know when those people are doing activism. And we're all very much used to being told to send money to Washington, even if it's for a third party, even if it's for a Tea Party. And we do that much more naturally than we do getting together and pooling some money and keeping it in your own community with your, the people that you know, and building the power base from the bottom up. And
that's
I think we have to start doing in the Tea Party.
That is a fabulous, fabulous idea and approach. And you're right on. That is 100% right. Imagine if you took those dollars that you send to the Republican Party and gave them to your local commissioner to help him get his message out, or your school board member, or your state representative or senator.
Right.
Sending money to a party is, you might as well take the money and flush it down the toilet, because that's what you're doing to it.
Right. Well, it's going to support, you know, the old-time mainstream media, the local television channels, and it's not being used very efficiently. And yet we're not used to doing this, because even when the 9/12 groups and the Tea Party got started, we were still getting messages, you know, send money to such and such big national organization. Send money to this public figure, that public figure who supports us. And we've been doing that for 3 or 4 years now. And we don't know where a lot of that money went. Meanwhile, some of our best local activists are living, you know, are living hand to mouth while they're continuing to try to be full-time activists. And that's something that I see as being very damaging on this side of the political equation, because on the left, everybody's pulling a paycheck, and most of those paychecks are coming from the American taxpayer.
Okay. That is absolutely key. Could you please repeat that again and explain it? Because I don't think people understand that this is the way it works. I really don't.
Yeah. On the left, and I used to be on the left, and when I would get together, when I was working in coalitions that were part of my job, I would be coalitioning with other activists from the various issues on the left. When I would go to a meeting, a lot of those times, those meetings were actually in public buildings, because, say, the Nurses Association would hold it, or we would be at a United Way, a facility that was public, that was a private-public partnership with the government. And so we were having left-wing political meetings on public property, and more than half of the people in the room would be on the public payroll. They would be representing teachers, or they would be representing some other group that was getting its money from taxpayers. And the people who weren't on the public payroll were full-time employees of some of the big national left-wing organizations, and there was virtually nobody in that room who was a volunteer. The left
Wow.
has an infrastructure of activism, of paid professional activists, that we simply lack on the right. And I don't know how you want to define us on the independent right, on the libertarian independent right, on the,
on the right, but not part of the Republican Party.
And,
yes.
You know, over here, most of the vast majority of people I meet are paying their own way to meetings. They're not collecting a paycheck from anybody. The nationals that we are used to sending our money to are not putting that money back into the grassroots. It's a one-way street. And there's an awful lot of people who come around and speak to Tea Party groups and or send solicitations by email, and they say, we're representing you in Washington, or we're training you, or we're teaching you how to do this. And they're really collecting money for big salaries for Washington lobby firms that claim to be speaking for us, but they're really no more on our side than the regular party people are. And so we have some very dedicated people in the grassroots who are doing this on their own time while trying to make a living. And it's a very different situation than the other side, and it's a very different situation from the two parties. And we need to stop making things so hard for ourselves.
You know, that is so key. That is so important. I'm running for office, and I am experiencing the same thing because I refuse to take donations from any corporation that's going to be some lobby group that I would have to go to Tallahassee and go yes, master to. So
right.
My campaign is very funded by small donations from wonderful people, not enough of them, and myself. And today I spent the day, my own gas, my own money, my own everything, running around the county. Now, that was a tank of gas. And I'm not complaining. I'm saying this as a point. That was a tank of gas. The tank of gas was $40. If I do that every day, by the end of the week, I spent a couple of $100 already. How am I going to get out the next week and do the same thing? Folks,
right.
You are absolutely right, Tina. If we don't start supporting local people, we can't say we want changes. And then when people step up to the plate, not change anything.
Right.
Help them.
I mean, especially at the state level. I mean, at the local and state level, you have an awful lot of people. They may even get a small paycheck from being a representative. But it's barely enough to live on. And so when you're making these types of sacrifices 24/7, you're going to have to make a choice. I mean, you're going to have to dance with whoever brung you. And if we're not actually supporting these people with $5, $10, $20, $25 checks that are coming from people who really want to have a voice against the powerful, then it's, you know, I'm not excusing it, but it's understandable that you've got to get your money from somewhere to be able to do this. And the other thing I'm concerned about in terms of organizing in the state of Florida, and I'm seeing the same thing in Georgia, is, you know, a whole lot of us got together. We were inspired by Glenn Beck. We were inspired by the 9/12 movement. We were inspired by the Citizen Action movement. And almost immediately, we began looking to the big national libertarian groups for guidance. And those folks came back into the grassroots and spread some money around. But what I've seen in both states that I've been living in the last couple of years is they spread the money around, and then they start making demands on the grassroots. And it is not a transparent process. And so another reason why we really need to be supporting our own groups and raising money every time we have a meeting and not being beholden to somebody for a $500 grant or a $2,000 grant is because if we're going to maintain independence as a movement, we need to not be answering the people who are telling us what to do.
You are absolutely right, and I experienced the same thing. The other day, my Tea Party got a call, and they were told by the organization that they were not going to be funded anymore. Well, we looked back, and they hadn't given us anything in 2 years, so it really didn't make any difference. But what was the problem? They made a commercial against a senator who actually listened to his constituents and did what we asked him to do, which was vote no on a school choice bill.
Yeah.
He voted no. We said, please. We sat down with him. There was, at different intervals, we went over what it meant. We went over everything about it. We showed him how it was phony, that school choice is no choice because the parents will lose all choice, because school choice with a charter school means that an incorporated board who answers to nobody will be making all of the choices.
And with our tax dollars.
And they're using our tax dollars. And when he saw that, and we said, please vote no. So he voted no. And then he was given a commercial against him, plus he's no longer considered a conservative candidate because he did not vote the way the organization, the way the lobby firm wanted him to vote.
Karen, are we using names here?
Yes, and it was AFP.
I have been so concerned about AFP's influence. I look at the way AFP treats the grassroots, and I think to myself, it's like those old ads about not having a date. I washed my hair for this. I walked away from well-organized, well-funded politics to be treated like this.
Right.
I've been trying to tell people in both Florida and Georgia, you know, if people won't treat you with respect, don't deal with those people. And I think
exactly.
What we've seen with AFP and FreedomWorks is that they, and Tea Party Patriots, and a lot of money went up to Georgia. And I don't know about all the iterations of Tea Party Patriots, but I do know that a lot of money went to a small group of activists who are mainly based in Georgia, not far from where I live now. And there's not a lot of accountability for where that money went. And money was being put back out into the grassroots, but not to the degree that I think it should have been. And anytime any one of these groups sends some money down and has strings attached to it and says, well, you can't say where you got it from, or you have to do what we want, or we're not going to give you more money, you might as well go back to the Republican Party. You might as well go to the Democratic Party, because there's more money in those places.
Yes.
I mean, if you want to take marching orders from somebody, go with one of the big parties and get more money for your marching orders.
We had the same thing go on. We are printing the American Patriot News newspaper. And it would have been really nice to be able to offer the groups that are printing, you know, a couple hundred dollars in the beginning to help with their printing costs. So I asked Tea Party Patriots. They weren't interested. I understand when you say I'm not interested. But I asked, the Self-Governance Citizens for Citizens for Self-Governance. And she said, okay, well, what do you think about the Convention of the States? And I said, that's probably the worst idea that I've heard in a long time. And she said, why? And I said, because first of all, I live in Florida, and I couldn't find one legislator that I would send to a meeting that I would trust.
Oh, my. That's an interesting point.
And I said, second of all, of the ones that I wouldn't send, not one of them has even read the Constitution. They think it's a living, breathing document. When you talk to them, they think it's an old, dirty piece of paper. What do they have to pay attention to it for? Why on earth would we want to give these people any power? And the answer to me was, well, I don't think we can support your newspaper.
Well, you know, I have a couple of things. I believe it. And, you know, I worked as a grant writer for years on the left. And it's a long, hard process to get a grant. You know, you have to know the people. You have to write the grant. You have to do follow-up. It usually takes 6 months to a year to get the money. You know, by that time, and this is something I think people really should hear, because there are people out there who I think are trying to do the right thing with big pots of money, and there are people who really aren't and are trying to use that money for power. But it doesn't matter which one of those things they're doing. Almost all of the time, if you actually apply yourself to raising the money among a group of people who know and respect you because of your reputation, you will find that you have enough money to do what you need to do. Instead of spending 2 months or 4 months or 6 months or a year chasing that grant. If people really feel like the project that they're doing is worth doing, and that newspaper is so worth doing, and the local activism we have is so worth doing, and the Common Core activism we've been doing is really making a mark, then dig into your pocket, and instead of trying to write a grant and constantly be holding your hand out to these big nationals, you know, who don't feel like they need to tell you what they're up to. You know, take the time to raise $20 from each person in the room and talk everybody into asking their friends for $20. And pretty soon you're going to find that you've got that $500 or $1,000 that you were previously put in the position of going around and asking for with your hand out to somebody who's living in a different state, who's got millions of dollars to distribute, and who really treats you like you're below them. And I'm not saying that the people you were speaking to did that, but there are, you know, and I think that there are some of these national groups that have really learned a lesson and have tried to be more responsive to the grassroots. I draw a big distinction between FreedomWorks and AFP. I had very negative experiences with AFP in Florida, and I was very suspicious of FreedomWorks when they were handing millions of dollars to Dick Armey.
Yes.
But, I mean, I think FreedomWorks, in contrast, heard that. You know, they heard the criticisms. They realized they'd gotten into a bad place. And they at least, after that, they at least were trying to be more what they represented themselves as being. On the other hand, I've watched AFP tear a swath through grassroots organizing in Florida. I have watched them pit people against each other. I have watched them hold little bits of money over people's heads, and I've watched them have some real contempt for the grassroots. And I think it's a different organization in different states, and I think the group in Georgia is a lot more responsive. But I came away from this last election with a very bad taste in my mouth for that organization. And I think anybody who goes into a room and tells some Tea Party groups, look, I'm going to give you $2,000, but you can't tell anyone where it's coming from. We need to, when we're working with each other, we need to be ethical enough to say to each other, hey, I'm getting money from here, I'm getting money from there. Because if we can't trust each other, we're not really a movement.
Right. And that's so important. Trust is such an important factor. Because this is exactly what happened to me the other day. I was told that our Tea Party was in trouble because I wrote an article saying what right did AFP have to go after a senator who was doing what his constituents asked him to do. Those are few and far between. So
right.
When we actually find one that works with us, it's an amazing thing. And now to have AFP go after him for that reason, because they didn't like the way he voted, well, that turned me off so totally to that organization. Again, and I agree with you, they are being controlled by the Republican Party. And nothing more evident than that.
You know, it's been a bait and switch in Florida. They have this Five for Florida thing, and they got groups to sign on to it. And people felt like they were signing on to something where they were magnifying their clout with the legislature, and that's what they were told. But
yes.
In actuality, the Five for Florida plan, I think, is very legislatively suspicious, because what they're doing is they're having Tea Party groups say, okay, we're signing a pledge, but that pledge is not attached to specific pieces of legislation. So then when they go back to Tallahassee and they say, we have 200,000 people around the state who support us, who signed this pledge to their Tea Party group, they can take that pledge and say, this pledge applies to this piece of legislation this way, this piece of legislation that way. And they're basically taking a big business agenda, and they're claiming that individual Tea Party groups and members are supporting that agenda when those Tea Party groups didn't sign up for that piece of legislation. They signed the Five for Florida pledge.
Right.
It's a classic legislative bait and switch, and I don't think anybody realized it was happening. But, you know, if they really wanted our support and they really wanted to work with us on certain bills, why don't they trust us to talk about the bills up front?
And
why don't they come to
happen.
Us and say, hey, we're fighting this bill, why don't you fight alongside us? No, they want you to sign a pledge and they want you to go away.
Yes.
And it's been
and
very troubling
exactly
to
right.
me watching this.
Yes.
This is the kind of thing I used to see on the left.
Well, as we both know, they're all trained in the they're all drinking out of the same trough. They're all reading the same playbook. Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals. We all read it. You know, it doesn't matter. We all read it, so it's the same book. that everybody's read. Okay, we read it. Now it's, how can I play it on you? How can I play it on you? Well, hello, now we got smart. We read the playbook too. It was like the Art of War, when you read the Art of War.
Right.
And then you say, oh, this is what my enemy is going to do. Was that on page 106? You know in advance because you read the same playbook. Nothing has changed.
Well, you know, it really is true. When I was lobbying the Georgia General Assembly, there were several lobbyists who would start out each session by reading The Art of War.
Really?
Yes. And these were people who were sort of across the political spectrum, but honestly, when they were talking to each other at the beginning of the session or they were bringing somebody along and they were training them, they would point to that book and they'd say, read this. This is the Bible of lobbying.
Oh, and interesting.
That is what it is. I mean, it's not mm-hmm. admirable, but, you know, we are dealing with the human spirit here. On the plus side, I think we should talk a little bit about how we've managed to change the conversation about Common Core.
Yes.
Because I don't think anybody was expecting that.
No, I think you're right. And that was fabulous. It really is. It was, and the fact that the Governor Scott probably did this one because he wanted to throw the Tea Parties a bone, and he brought back cursive writing, which to me was a huge victory. I don't know if people realize, but it might actually give the human capital the ability to read, because cursive writing is one of the greatest tools for reading. It incorporates so much with the eye-hand coordination, with the formulation of the letters as you're writing them. And when you write something, I try to tell everyone, the most important thing to do when you are learning to read is write, because as you are writing, it's another mechanism in your memory to be able to formulate the words. So
right.
It's a multiple process, and it should give the kids an edge in reading, or at least it should help them, if, of course, they are not using it just as a way to placate people and only, not as a mandatory subject. But it's
well,
so
you know, here's a symbolic victory for us. It says something about Common Core in general. Because they can change the name of Common Core 100 times, and they will. But the Common Core is at its essence, as you obviously know, a transfer of power from local control to state and of state to national. And part of that transfer of power has to do with putting everything on computers and making things less accountable because all the learning, all the teaching, and all of the learning are going to be computer-based. And for a long time, I was wondering why it was that cursive was such a big issue. You know, I'm not very good at it. I'm left-handed. And if I, you know, if we lost computers tomorrow, nobody would be able to read what I write anymore because my handwriting is very bad. But it occurred to me, as I was listening to these arguments, that cursive is one of the few things you do in a classroom that's done with a pen and paper anymore.
Yes. And yeah, you're absolutely right. And that, you know, if I write something and I hand it to you, there's no way for anybody to monitor what I did. And that goes back to the monitoring idea also. So that's why I always tell everybody, when you go to a meeting, put your laptop away or your iPad away, take a pen and paper and write down, write notes. Because when you write notes, even though you don't draw on it that minute, the brain is such a wonderful thing. Whatever you write, whatever you read, it's stored up there. And if you've written it, it gives it that extra storage space so that you can draw on and remember what you did. And by taking away writing and taking away the ability to write, it inhibits your ability to read because
it's
you're
true.
Not putting it together. There's no meshing. There's a reason why things work well together. And that this is a huge victory for our children, and they actually might be able to read the Constitution, and they might be able to read the Declaration of Independence. So at least we know that that won't go away anytime soon if the Florida children know how to read. Of course, they may not understand what it means, but at least they will know how to read it. Understanding will be the next phase. But at
least that was a good sign.
When I started
teaching composition when I was a graduate student, this was a while ago, and my students were among the first students who had been using computers from the time they'd gotten into school and learned how to read. And none of them knew how to write in longhand and edit in longhand. And we were getting to a point with college anthologies where even the students who were majoring in English were just reading very brief passages from books. And Common Core is kind of the far end of that road. You have people who are used to only sitting and passively responding to a computer screen, who have never sat down and written a five-paragraph essay on a piece of paper, who have never written longhand, and who have never read a whole book. And Common Core, I mean, in a lot of ways, Common Core is nothing new under the sun. It's just the latest iteration of educational trends that have been damaging our concentration and our focus and our thinking skills for a generation now. But I actually ran a classroom. I had to get special permission to do it. I ran a classroom when I was teaching composition, freshman comp, where I wouldn't let students use computers in the classroom. They actually had to sit and take longhand notes, and once a semester they had to write an essay in class in longhand. And I had to, and I don't think I'd even be allowed to do that today. Because nowadays, everything is about the computer. It's all about the form. Nothing's about the content anymore. And Common Core has embedded this barreling into the future where people don't have their own thoughts, where people don't have to formulate their own ideas, where people have to turn a machine on in order to do any kind of intellectual work. I think this cursive thing may really be key in ways that even we don't completely understand. Because this may be the first time that a lot of these kids have to sit in a quiet space with no electronics and actually interact with the words on a page.
Yes. Yes, and you're absolutely right. It is so important. That was exactly what I, when I went to testify, I told them that the eye-hand coordination in the quiet space is so much more meaningful to the mind than putting something on a keyboard, which you have no, it's like your handwriting. It's so personal. It's your identity. It gives you that fulfillment. I remember reading, when you read a book when you're a kid, there's nothing like reading a book, finishing the chapter, closing the book, and getting that feeling of accomplishment.
Yeah.
When you're working on a computer, it's one thing that goes to the next thing that goes to the next thing. You never really feel you're finished. So you never get to say, wow, I feel good about that. I finished that. I can close the book and I can come back later. That pride, that piece, that feeling of accomplishment is missing.
And it's a sense of permanence. And that leads me to this wonderful book. I don't know if you've managed to get your hands on it yet.
Not yet, but I will.
The Story Killers. And my friend and writing partner, Mary Graybar, she went and saw the author of The Story Killers last night up in Georgia. And she said he was very well received by the crowd up there. He's an educator, and he's written about how his name is Terrence Moore, and he was in Gainesville, Georgia last night. And The Story Killers is, he's an English teacher. It's about how the traditional stories of our culture shape our culture and how Common Core is threatening the transmission of these important traditional stories.
Wow.
And it's just a wonderful book. It's called The Story Killers, A Common Sense Case Against the Common Core. And it's really sort of an argument for the humanities. It's an argument for reading. It's an argument for reading books. It's not just about this temporary political fight that we find ourselves in. It's about a much deeper analysis of what's happening to our education system. And it's just an absolutely wonderful read.
Okay. I will send that out on our next newsletter as well. I went to a meeting today, and I actually told a group of commissioners that they should be getting this because this was a school board, and I recommended that book. And I said, I haven't read it yet, but I was told it is fantastic.
Well, we've got a couple copies floating around, and we're all fighting about it.
Yes, I said I totally trust the person that said it. You know, that told me it was great, and I believe in what she says. So get that book.
Well, and I've got one more suggestion for you. I know that you know Mary Graybar, and she runs the website Dissident Prof. And Mary and I work together up in Atlanta. And she's been doing some really fabulous reporting on Common Core issues for something that your listeners may not be familiar with. It's called the Selous Foundation, S-E-L-O-U-S, the Selous Foundation. And for over the last couple of months, they've had Mary do some analysis of the testing. She's written about Arne Duncan. She's written about the origins of the Common Core movement, and her articles can all be found at their website. And I'm giving this plug because you know how Mary is. She's gotten in there, and she's done the hard research.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go there and you look at what she's written, you'll find a lot of good arguments for the legislative session because I honestly don't know what's going to happen in Florida this year. And I know that in Georgia we're going to have a very short session. It started on Monday because the elections are coming up. But I think in both places, we've got to be concentrating on a couple of things. We've got to be uniting behind whatever legislation there is to slow this thing down. And even more importantly, we've got to be sending a message to the Republican Party. The Democratic Party, you know, in both states, they're going to be with us on some of these issues.
Right.
And the liberal activists are going to be with us on some of these issues. This is becoming a complicated landscape politically. But where we need to be applying our pressure, because we can't pressure the Democrats, but we need to be applying our pressures, are on the Republican Party and be letting them know, I mean, this really is a war at this point, be letting them know that there will be negative consequences if they try to be dismissive towards our concerns about this issue. And, you know, we've seen on both states, we've seen these quote-unquote listening tours where there's been a big dog and pony show and they've brought people around and, you know, they have the people on the education committee sitting up at the front of an audience, and people get 3 minutes or 2 minutes to speak. And that was kind of mortifying in certain ways for people. People who don't usually show up and participate in the political process, I think came away from that feeling like they'd been humiliated. And I think they should have felt that way, because in both states, the people, these things were highly, highly coordinated events designed to diffuse negative energy and not actually listen.
Well, there is a perfect description of the Delphi technique, which is exactly what it is that they're using. And as you go to these meetings and you answer their survey questions, you begin to realize that they're slanted in a certain direction and there's never a place to put a comment.
Yeah,
they don't want to hear from you. That's for sure. There's never a place. Anything other than checking a box is, you know, on their predetermined scorecard doesn't exist. And that's another issue also. That we experienced on their dog and pony show in Tallahassee. I found it extremely interesting because when they were in the lower counties, the information that was coming in was everybody was against Common Core. Well, by the time they got to Tallahassee, the landscape had changed, and all of a sudden the majority of the people were for Common Core. And then I began to think to myself, now I wonder how many of these people were paid to be here tonight.
Right.
Because, as you said, we know that when people come in from the left, they're paid.
Right.
They're paid individuals, and there is a big difference between somebody getting a paycheck and somebody getting up and speaking on their own who has not been coached, who's speaking from the heart. And then you have these people sitting there and doodling and twiddling their thumbs and not listening.
Well, I think two things happened with those listening tours. I think there were a lot of people who were coming in who were testifying as if they were individuals or just concerned parents, and in one way or another they were being subsidized by the system. Either they were school teachers, and they were there, you know, they were there knowing that if they spoke positive. I mean, we have school teachers in the coalitions that are forming in Georgia who have reasonable concerns about coming out against Common Core in terms of how it's going to affect their job. But the people who are working in the school board, in the school systems who are for Common Core don't have to worry about that. They can show up and openly support it and get praised at work, and it benefits them. So there
right.
was an unevenness there because the school employees knew that speaking up for Common Core would put them in good graces with the administration, no matter how they felt personally. Then we
yes.
also had a lot of parents. You know, parents get brought in to school systems, sometimes under Title I, which is low-income schools, and they're given certain resources to, quote-unquote, advocate. And the parents who are cooperative and submissive and deliver the message that the school superintendent wants them to deliver, there's a wide variety of ways that they get subsidized to do that. There's a whole reward system built into that sort of activism that's kind of fake activism. And then you have the legislators, and I'm speaking in particular in Georgia of the head of the Education Committee, Brooks Coleman, who came out after going around the state, and every place he went, the vast majority of people were against Common Core. And then he went to the Leonardville Constitution, and he said, oh, well, you know, most people are supporting Common Core. That's what you're seeing. It was an abject lie. I mean, he
yeah.
lied about what he was seeing there. And of course, the newspapers were not interested in investigating that lie, and I think the same thing happened in Florida.
So you have legislators
who are lying.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Before we go any further, everyone, you are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio, and we are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and on Red State Talk Radio on Wednesday at 12 p.m., and on Sunday at 12 a.m. Please visit our websites, agenda21today.com, panhandlepatriots.com, saveamericafoundation.com, karenshone.com, and vote Karen Schoen. Thanks, Tina. And you are listening to Karen Schoen, and my guest is Tina Trent. Tina, before we go any further, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you?
My blog is tinatrent.com, and I write about crime, politics, and academia there. You can also find some of my work at the Soros Files, where I analyzed George Soros' nonprofit network, and that's the sorosfiles.com, and that was a project of America's survival. And I am traveling around Florida and Georgia now. Those are my two home bases. And I am helping train people in the citizen activist movement to build the types of coalitions that the left uses to enhance their power. So I'm working with different groups, and I'm trying to get them to understand the coalition building process so that they can speak in a united voice.
Folks, it is so important, and if you are one of our listeners, please go on Tina's site. Please get in contact with her. Building a coalition is the only way that we are going to win this, and I will use win in quotes, because building a coalition means that we all get to work together under one topic, and that's something important that Tina, I'd like you to tell everyone, because building a coalition does not mean that you lose your individual identity of your group. It means you come
No.
together for a topic. And I think people misunderstand when they say building a coalition, they think that their group that they worked so hard on, they're going to lose their identity. So maybe you can explain what a coalition is and how it anticipates working. And it was probably the best meeting that I have gone to in a long time, trying to unify the Florida groups, because we are so diverse and we have such big egos that we allow them to get in the way. And too often, good people who have started out doing wonderful things get tossed aside for an inconsequential reason. So if you could share that information, Tina, that would be great.
Sure. I've been working with a number of groups in Florida trying to find ways to magnify our voices in opposing Common Core and supporting traditional education in general. And this past Saturday, we got together in Lakeland. It was a wide number of groups. I think there were 24 different groups represented, and there were more than 50 people there. And Chrissy Blevio, organizer extraordinaire, brought these people together. And she's based in Sarasota. And we did a coalition training. And I learned how to do coalition building on the left, where they're very, very good at it. And one of the things I observed in the 90s when I was on the left was that very diverse groups were coming together, and they were getting paid money to do this, and sitting down and forming a coalition that was going to go through several different issues, but they were going to stick together and stay at the table and talk to each other. And that's really how liberal left activists managed to bring their movement back to life when it was no longer particularly popular with the American public. Because if you're sitting at a table next to people, if you've got environmentalists sitting next to gay rights activists, sitting next to union people, sitting next to civil rights people and pro-choice people, and they're all deciding they're going to work on something together, they have a tremendous amount of power, and they're not spending their time fighting each other. And the left figured this out, and we've never, we're real youngsters when it comes to that type of organizing. Now, within the citizen movement, the word coalition gets thrown around a lot, but I think the best definition of a coalition is a group of groups. You can have individuals joining a coalition, but coalitions are really like-minded groups coming together to work on a cause. And the best metaphor for a coalition, I think, is a table. You build a table, all the chairs are the same height, everybody sits at the table, and they stay at the table, and they try to figure out what to do next together. And even if you disagree with other people at the table, you try your hardest to stay at the table. And that's the coalition. The coalition is agreeing to try to work together. And sometimes, groups will say, I'm sorry, we're not going to participate in this, we're going to walk away. But know that the table is still there and you've built it. And you have a seat at it you can come back to, as long as you're not being really destructive of other people. Because
and make it a round table so nobody feels that they're sitting at the head, because that always creates problems.
Nobody's sitting at the head. That's right. The purpose of the coalition, the purpose of the board of directors of a coalition is to make sure the coalition runs smoothly. It's contingent on all the members to work on the issue. A coalition, a good, functioning, healthy coalition has rules. It has bylaws. It has regular elections. Each group gets one vote. People have responsibilities towards each other. And a whole lot of the things that have been coming at us in the last couple of years have come up so fast and hard that we haven't had time to take those steps in the first place. We haven't had time to build the table before we're all having to fight a fight. And I realize I'm kind of mixing metaphors here, but the table is, just having a set of rules by which you deal with each other, it doesn't solve all problems, obviously. It makes some problems more intense and personal for a while as you're moving into accepting this kind of structure. But it is extremely important that people start to maybe step outside of their comfort zones a little bit and professionalize these groups that we belong to and professionalize our dealings with each other, because this fight isn't going to go away in a year or 2 years and 5 years. And if we continue to still to kind of run along like shaggy dogs, chasing after issues and chasing after each other and having a lot of competing voices, we're up against a very well coordinated set of machines on the other side. So, we've actually got to get ourselves a bit of discipline, and really the healthiest way to do it is to make these deals with each other where we sit at the table and solve our problems and fix our differences.
That is
so that's what we were doing on Saturday, and we've got an interim board, and, you know, that's a really important thing, and I heard from Chrissy Blevio that the interim board came up with a name for the coalition. They had to, a lot of names are taken, so they had to find a name that wasn't taken, and they chose the Florida Coalition for Educational Excellence.
Good.
So that's going to be the name of the coalition. We've got many organizations that are excited to sign on. And now when we go into the legislative session in Florida, you know, we will have this group and we can all sit down and we can speak with a united voice. And what's powerful about the meeting on Saturday was that we had people from every corner of the state there.
Yes. And that was really terrific. And you know what else was great? People were respectful of other people. And coming together under one voice, it was fantastic because it wasn't just Tea Party groups. It was different groups. And it didn't make any difference, just like you said, whether today I'm wearing this hat or tomorrow I'm wearing that hat. If the message is clear and concise, we can all support it. And knowing that we will go to Tallahassee as a united force will really make a big impression, especially to a group of people that feel that they are anointed and should be there.
Within both the activist world and the world of elected officials, some people feel entitled. And some people have put a whole lot of work into causes, and they look around and they think, well, I've put more hours on the table, so therefore, you know, people should follow me. Something that if you make that deal to step up to the table and sit down on chairs of equal level with each other, you're going to find out that the person at the end of the table there is really good at grassroots organizing. The person over here on the right is really good at research. The person over here is great with the media. And, you know, as soon as you stop competing with each other, and here again, I mean, it's not like this is a utopia and all the problems go away, but when you divide up the labor, all this different political labor, among people who have different talents, and you agree to work together on it, you don't end up with each group just feeling like all they have is that 3 minutes in a listening tour. If we'd had a coalition that was functioning and had rules and bylaws and, you know, really had time to organize with each other before the listening tours, we could have walked into each of those auditoriums in Florida and we could have had 20 people lined up to deliver 3 minutes each of an hour-long message.
Right.
And
it would have been important.
And the next time they do it, we can do that. The next time there's a committee meeting, we will have 20 people lined up, all speaking for their own groups and in their own voices, but also in coordination with the coalition.
I can't impress upon everyone how important that is. As a lobbyist, as a citizen lobbyist going to Tallahassee, nothing was more disheartening than listening to well-meaning people get up in front of the legislature and say things that made absolutely no sense and essentially wasted 3 minutes to the degree that the legislators would look at them and go, oh, just another nutcase, just another kook job, and then diminish the people for being there and for doing that. And working this way together is eons ahead of what we did last year. Eons.
It absolutely is, and they're already, you know, like we had talked about on Saturday, we need to celebrate our successes. The fact that when you look at the array of forces that are lined up against the anti-Common Core people, you've got Republicans, you've got Jeb Bush, you've got Bill Gates, you've got most of the Democrats, you've got most of the Republicans, you've got most of the school administrators and staff because they've been told this is what's going to happen, and they're tired of doing new things. And with despite all of that, that we have managed to move the public's attention and move the ball on this at all is profound. I mean, it really shows that we have a message that really matters. And we have some, I mean, how many people in that room on Saturday raised their hand when we asked who'd been an educator? I'd say half
of
the people
who
have been an educator.
Oh, my God, that was wonderful.
I have this experience at every tea party I speak to. Educators, social workers, these are people who really care about the public. They really care about the poor. They really care about America. And they've seen how it got done in the past, and they know personally from their own work experience and lives that the stuff that the American public is being sold by both political parties is not just hurting, it's destroying. And that's why when I walk into a Tea Party or a 9-12 group, I'm completely unsurprised when someone comes up to me and says, hey, I used to be a social worker. Hey, I used to be a school principal. Because it's the people who made the sacrifices for their community and then saw what happened who are the angriest about what's happening to America.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is wonderful to know that they will take a role. Now, usually, I'm so proud of some of the teachers now because usually I couldn't get teachers to talk. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you stood in front of a classroom of 20, 30 kids. You can't talk in front of a tea party? Come on. You should be the ones that should be helping the people get through and get to the public speaking. But they were so timid and so afraid, and now it's so wonderful to see them finally be there and be the support system that's necessary. And I have great news. I did not tell you. When I got home on Sunday, I had an email from a woman who was 19 years old, and she and her group are the PANDA, the People Against the NDAA, and they are a young, she said they're all up probably in their teens to 30s. And they started looking at the NDAA, and then they realized that what this sustainable stuff that they had been taught all their lives, it gives them nothing when they grow up. They will have nothing. And she said, we are beginning to realize. And then she said, but how did that happen? And I said, it's because you have to look at what's the common thread that every American has? School. No matter what, one way or another, you're going to wind up in some format of training of school.
Right.
And if the underlying message, when you're there, and that's hammered through everything you do, then you wind up as a subservient mouse that has no thought process because you're guided into this. She said, we are so angry our generation is being robbed. And then she said, what can we do? And that was so nice to hear. And
that's
I said,
terrific.
We have to focus on the school. And she said, we will. Let me talk to everyone. So would that not be wonderful to have a group of young people who get it, who understand that if we don't stop this, and work together to do it, that we have nothing. And we
something else a coalition can do is if individuals contact, I mean, a coalition is a very flexible structure. And Chrissy Blevio in particular has been working on creating some membership groups for parents and teachers. I mean, there's always strength in numbers. And because it's Florida, of course, grandparents.
Right.
Who are against the Common Core. And once this group is up and running and we have an email address and we have ways to contact us, so if somebody wants to join as an individual and they want to find an affinity group, if they want to find other people who are like them, whether it's students or grandparents or teachers, we can help them do that, or you guys can help them do that, because I'm actually based in Georgia now. And, you know, you can build those statewide membership groups, which are such an important part of the movement. And, you know, they are independent. They are one single group within the coalition, but the coalition can provide the resource of getting people in touch with each other. And often that's very hard to do at the state level. You can sign up for a national group or you can find a local group, but at the state level groups are very important because it really is true when you're talking about the state legislature, 4 or 5 phone calls from a district gets counted as 40 or 50 or 100 people supporting or opposing something in the mind of that legislator.
That's right.
So you can have a lot of power at the state level with just a couple people in each zip code.
Right, and people don't understand that, so that is part, and that's another thing. The coalition can train, can teach. There's so many different things that a coalition can do that the regular, you know, your group then takes back to your community and implements it.
Right, and during the legislative session, that's really important because if there's a couple of groups who have members or who are lobbyists up there, and the role they'll play is to bring the day-by-day, minute-by-minute information back to the rest of the group. I mean, this is not a group that's going to have a big budget and its own lobbyist or anything, but there were some wonderful people in that room on Saturday who know an awful lot about Florida politics. And, you know, and they're going to bring that to other groups. So if you've got a group that's in some small corner of the state, or if you've got a group where nobody's ever been to Tallahassee to lobby, this person can come to you and explain to you what's going on, and you guys would know you're working towards the same goals. And I think the goals we talked about were getting some pieces of legislation out of committee, but also hammering away at the Republican executive committees. And somebody there made a very good point on Saturday. He said, you know, there was the big battle going on in the Republican executive committees about passing an anti-Common Core referendum at the same time as we were meeting in Lakeland. The Republican executive committees were meeting in Orlando. And ultimately, the top of that structure shot down the referendum. And I think a lot of people were surprised because they thought that they could convince the Republican executive committees to take a verbal stand against Common Core and, you know, sign something that said they were opposed to it, and that didn't happen. Well, this person at the meeting pointed out that that didn't happen because not enough people had gotten involved at the local level with the Republican executive committees and sent someone to the next meeting in the state.
Mm-hmm.
The way that you actually influence those people is by sheer numbers.
Right.
You know, just because you belong to the coalition doesn't mean you don't also join the Republican Executive Committee in your hometown. In fact, it means that you ought to.
Yes, sure.
So, you know,
or
you can belong
whatever.
To multiple groups.
Which is the beauty of a coalition. And that's what makes it so terrific is that you can belong to different groups. So you can have a wonderful support system and work off of each other on your individual causes. You create a finished product. Now you have a built-in distribution that will be happy to send it out because if they believe in what you're doing, you know them already. They know you. You trust each other. You can, if you say, hey, different issue, but could you put this on your news blast? Now you have a bigger distribution that you can work with too. So it's so
absolutely
important.
I mean, the genius of this movement is that people know each other. That you sit down at a table across the table from each other, and you get to know people. And you're not going to like everybody you meet, but if you sit there and you talk to somebody for even 5 minutes, you understand where they're coming from, and that is what is just amazing about the Citizen Patriot movement to me. I've been involved in politics since I was very young. And I've never seen so many people just coming out and fighting for something because they believe in it. And coming together against outrageous odds and still working together.
Yep. And that is, this is wonderful. Well, it's like we have always been saying, the difference between the right and the left is that we have a very bad habit. We say because we're so individual, we say, oh, here's all of the research, go read it and make your own decision. And the left isn't trained that way. They're trained not to make their own decision. They're trained to make the decision that the government or the decision maker wants them to make. So it's a very different ideology that neither of them understand each other's ideology.
And they're very, very well organized. And they're very, you know, it's very funny because they take marching orders very well. And they also show leadership very well. And everybody knows their role, and they fall into place. And we are very disorganized and sloppy compared to them. And, in some ways it shows our independence, but when push comes to shove and you've got to fight for something, you're at a serious disadvantage when you're up against the well-oiled machines of the left. And with a coalition that is in touch with each other on a regular basis, making plans together, there's a lot of efficiency built into that it is an efficiency we desperately need.
Yes.
We keep recreating the wheel, and we don't have time for that anymore.
No, we don't.
We've had some of the best researchers out there, but there are people in that room on Saturday who haven't seen their research. You know, there's just, you feel like you have to do everything from A to Z by yourself, and you really don't.
Well, that was one of the things that I learned when I worked with the left, is that the power of delegation.
Yeah.
Problem is, in many situations, I myself delegated power to what turned out to be the wrong person. And not because the person was incapable, but because the person was trained by a liar to lie.
Yeah.
And that created a whole situation. So I had an idea, and I'm going to give you a call later on to discuss it. But I'm putting together, and I would like to work with you on this. It's kind of like the lesson plan or the organization piece. If every group did this way, then you could put in anything, it wouldn't make any difference. The coalition is the perfect place to use as an example to create this, because the coalition is going to put the structure in place that the people will know what their role is, be able to follow it, and be able to act just like the left without giving away their values and their ideology. So it's like I try to tell people, if you're going to do something with the left, then learn what it is that they're doing. Do it their way. Make it easy for them, and in the end you provide them with your piece of information. Then it's easier for them to make that turn into what you want to guide them into. Because the structure is already set up. It's set up in their structure. Use their structure. They give it to you.
Well, it's been an interesting thing in Georgia because there are some Tea Party people who are working with the Sierra Club. And and we talked about this a little bit on Saturday. They're working with the Sierra Club against some regional legislation. And, it makes for an interesting political bedfellows, to say the least. I mean, they were actually working, they were working on some legislation that had to do with the power companies, breaking the monopoly of the power companies. And they, it certainly wasn't all or even many of the Tea Parties. It was just one Tea Party, even though the media wanted it to be that, the media was implying that with all the Tea Parties, because they liked the idea of it. But, when you go into a battle like the Common Core battle, you're going to find that you have certain common ground with leftists.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's not a bad thing to work with people on a piece of legislation if you agree. But from my own personal experience, I think you have to be very careful.
Well,
because we are not as well organized as they are.
That's right. And
they can take you over very easily.
Yes. And that's what we allowed that to happen last year, in 2010, when everybody got excited because ABC, whatever group, asked them to come and work for them and work on the campaign, and they were going to get paid and blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden they were licking the boots of the Republicans.
Right.
And it was the Republicans, instead of saying, no, we're not here to lick your boots. We're here to put you and smack you into place because you're doing the wrong thing.
Well, unfortunately, I was one of those people, and I was very lucky that I got to meet a lot of people. I did some freelance work for AFP, and I was very grateful that I got to meet a lot of the people I got to meet. I mean, I got to meet you. I got to meet a lot of other people I would not have otherwise probably encountered so quickly. But, yeah, I mean, people gave up their power, and they gave up their lists, and they took marching orders. And if there's one thing I learned from the left, if there's one besides the fact that I have a different ethical structure than I used to, if there's one thing I learned from the left, is that your group's list is gold.
Gold, I know.
Your list. You build a group by meeting people and cooperating with them and having them trust you. Don't go giving that list away.
Well, I thought about that for a long time, and then I figured out if you take a look at a corporation, you have really two facets of a corporation. One is your operations, and the other is your sales and marketing. And the left is the sales and marketing because there's no substance there. But, man, do they know how to sell. Man, do they know how to market a product. Man, could they bring in gazillions of distribution channels. That's what they're good at. What they weren't good at was the organizational piece, which once they learned that, that's how everything got together. So what we are, we're better organized ourselves, but we don't have the structure to be organized with others.
Right.
So, you know, so I can organize my office. I know exactly what I'm going to do. I can keep a calendar. I can keep this. I can do that. I can do multiple things, whatever. But when it comes to working with other people, a person like me without other training would get confused, and that was how the ego part would get in the way. No, I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to do it that way. And that's the part that always created the tension. And then we, never having done this before, never thought it was a bad thing to give away your membership list.
Well, I'll tell you something else.
A salesman would never do that.
Yeah. People were being told to do this, and they were being told they needed to do it. And these are, for the most part, people who've never been political activists or full-time political activists, and they couldn't, and they wanted to trust the people who were telling them those things.
Yes.
They could not believe that somebody who appeared to agree with them in terms of principle was going to take those resources and steal them. But that's really what happened.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like
politics ain't beanbags. Politics is hard, dirty stuff. Yeah. And, you know, no matter who you're dealing with, unless it's a fellow citizen activist and you can look them in the eye and you know them and trust them from having dealt with them in the past, don't give it away. And even if you come together with a group and you agree that you're going to pool all your lists and send a message to Tallahassee or Washington, you're doing it just for that cause at that time. You still own – your group owns that list.
Owns that list, that's right.
Your people are your power, and don't give your power away.
We give you permission to be used once for that list, and that's all. But
that's
again,
right.
You know, again, people, what we have to do is go into more of sales 101, where your sales distribution list is the most important thing. You know how to organize this? I just thought of that. They didn't ever teach and always diminished network marketing. And they always tossed it aside. They tossed it to the curb. They always said, oh, blah, 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 not a real legitimate business. That's the way they organized, and that's why they did that. Because they have their little team leaders, and the little team leader has their little house parties, and then the little house parties, they bring in more guests, and they give away gifts, and they have presents, and all the time they're doing the same thing.
Well, that's right. And if you think back to the anti-communist movement of the 60s, where there were just citizens getting together and saying, hey, you know, the 50s and 60s, hey, you know, there seems to be a radicalism in our that's threatening our country. That was direct marketing. I mean, for a very long time, direct marketing that was being used for good was coming from the right against communism and collectivism. People were looking at Whitaker Chambers. People were reading about communism and its effect on society. and they were coming together with their neighbors and they were fighting things. And I think that when the Tea Party and the 9/12 movement started, people remembered that and they were trying to do the same thing again. But unfortunately, there were a lot of pretty slick people coming out of Washington saying, hey, I can use this movement.
That's yours. Oh, man, this is yours. All right. That is so true.
And it's a shame because, you know, a lot of people, I was talking to a group in Sun City Center, Florida, and a woman came up to me and she said, such and such group, you know, I send them $25 every month. And I looked at her and I thought, this woman doesn't look like she can afford $25 a month. She was very much a senior citizen. She was very elderly. And she said, do you know what they do with the money? And I didn't want, I mean, it came out of left field for me. I wasn't expecting that kind of question. It was one of the first times I'd spoken to a group in Florida. And I wish I had sat down and really talked to her that day. Because what I should have said to her was, no, and don't give your money to anybody who doesn't answer the phone. Because I didn't know that much about these groups then. And the more I learned about them, the more I realized that they're just harvesting money and names from the grassroots.
That's right. Money, names, and they want your donation.
And there's nothing wrong with working with them. If they want to come to the table and sit down with us and organize, there's a seat at the table for them. But you know what? It's one seat. And one of the very key things about coalition building at the state level is national organizations can't serve on the board. National organizations can join the coalition. They can be supportive. But if it's a state-level coalition, they may not serve as officers. And that is because they would have an outside influence. And if they want to work with you and they're sincere about it, that's not going to bother them at all.
Right. Absolutely.
Because this time next year, I'd like to see every single group working together. And honestly, I don't care if it's in this coalition or if it's in five different coalitions around the state. But when we show up in Tallahassee, we're standing side by side.
Yes. That is so important, especially folks in the state. The size and with the influence of Florida and Georgia, and the pressure is going to get worse as it gets colder and things get worse. So this is so wonderful. It really is.
Well, I'm so glad to talk to you, Karen. I would have done a lot of things differently during the last election if I'd known then what I know now. But if one good thing came of it, I got to meet you, and it's wonderful, and I love your energy, and I love your commitment, and I have so much respect for what you're doing.
Well, thank you. Me too. And it is really terrific to be able to find people who still have values and morals and believe in themselves enough to say, I can do it. And this is another thing, too. The leaders are us. You know,
yeah.
We are the leaders. Stop looking for leaders, folks. Look in the mirror. You're the leader.
Send yourself $25 and give yourself your own list.
That's right.
And stop sending it to Washington.
That's right. Stop giving those turkeys and stop giving them money.
I do just want to say there are groups. I mean, I think Heritage Action is one of them. There are groups that are out there that are listening to the grassroots. And when people stand alongside you, even if you don't agree on every single facet of every issue, I think a lot has to do with the attitude that those national organizations have. And the American Principles Project is one of them. And we're very lucky to have Jane Robbins in Georgia.
Right.
And, you know, they've made some great videos. And, you know, there are national organizations that the National Association of Scholars is another one. They've solicited from Mary Graybar to do some research on Common Core. They have members that stand on all different sides of this issue, but they're thinking about it and they're researching it and they're listening.
Oh,
you know, we are having an impact in all sorts of places that people may not know about.
Well, that is incredible. It really is. Nothing excites me more than having somebody from another state send back my email because I'm on their list.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know whose list you're on, when you get stuff in the mail, but when you get back your own information, it's like, wow, you know, they're really paying attention. They're forwarding it. This is great.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And I always send them back, and I say, thank you for forwarding. Because,
well, you know, we talked about on Saturday, always thank mm-hmm. people. And there's a yep. wonderful organizer in Georgia who has 25 steps to a successful meeting. His name is Conrad Quagliori, and if you go to his website, I think he's in the Cherokee Tea Party Patriots. I'm not 100% sure of that name.
You could send me the link when you get a chance.
I sure will. And he, you know, he describes very simple things. Send thank yous to new members when they come to your group. Meet them
mm-hmm.
at the door.
Yep.
You know, I always add, have a bit of food. You know, it's these things that, you know, it's these things that make people feel welcome when they're taking that step outside of a comfort zone and getting involved in something.
Yes. Treat others as though you would like to be treated.
Right.
You know, the golden rule hasn't gone anyplace. It still needs to be brought back. If we're going to be respectful, yes. And if that's the whole thing, you can say, you know, people always say to me, do you mind if I criticize you? No, I don't mind. I feel criticism is a learning experience. How else are you going to learn if you don't know what the people feel, if they're afraid to tell you what they actually feel about what you're doing or saying if they don't tell you? So you can criticize somebody in a positive way, or you can criticize them in a negative way, and we've got to put our positive hat on.
We
accomplish a lot more.
We've got plenty of enemies.
Yeah, we have plenty. Yes, we don't need to make each other enemies.
We need
to not do that in a big way, especially in Florida, because Florida is high on everybody's radar. Everybody wants Florida. Now think about, why does everybody want Florida? Why are they going to want the southern state? Because they're getting older and it's going to get cold up north. So think about that, folks. Think about what
you're
doing.
People are really watching what's going to happen here. I mean, it's a very
yes.
different atmosphere in Georgia. There's always problems with organizing, but in Georgia, you've got a much more cohesive bunch to begin with, and geographically, they're closer.
Yes.
And you've got a republic. You've got a very Republican state as opposed to what's essentially a purple state here, and it's just that
yes.
much easier.
Yes.
So Florida is the hardest state to organize in, and it's also the biggest battleground state, and that's not going to be changing in the next 4 years.
No, not going to be changing anytime soon, because the three-letter word is still going to be here, and he still thinks he's governor, and he still thinks he runs everything.
You know, every
and
time I look at Scott and I think to myself, okay, he sort of is like a space alien. I don't even know if that's a negative thing. The guy's just kind of strange. And then I look back and I think about Jeb Bush and I think, wow, you know, maybe it took a space alien to conquer that.
Yeah.
Because politics in this state is so inherently weird. And Jeb Bush is so powerful. And, you know,
yeah.
really, when you go to Washington, they're still sitting around Grover Norquist's knee and talking about how they can't wait for the second coming of the Bushes, for the third coming. And it's utterly mind-boggling. It's like they don't even know the rest of the country is out here.
No, they don't. They really do not.
And they don't
really,
care.
They really, really do not. And that's the other thing. So I have decided the last letter I think was the letter before that I wrote to my representative, I wrote, "Dear Useful Idiot," because since you read the book and you're practicing it, I can call you what they do. And I told him, oh, yes, that he should start watching some of the movies in the 40s. I started watching some of the movies from the 40s. My girlfriend has been sending them to me. And it's very, very interesting because you can see the things unfolding as to what they're doing. They're doing the same thing. Nothing has changed. And when you realize that, you can anticipate what the next moves are going to be. So I told him that one of the values of erasing history was the fact that they don't know that Hitler killed all of the legislators because they knew where the bodies were buried, so they were the first group that he killed off.
Wow.
So the
See,
value
I didn't
of,
know that.
Yes, the value of not knowing history means that you have no idea that your name is on the list. He just he killed the generals, and all of the all of like the first and second row generals and politicians.
Amazing. We are not living in boring times, unfortunately.
No. Nope, we are not. But if you want to see, folks, what's going on, take a listen. Go and get rent some of the movies from the 40s, and you'll see exactly the same thing unfolding. Oops, there goes the Christians, there goes the Jews, here comes the Muslims. Nothing has changed, folks. Same thing, going on and on. Nothing has changed. That's the good thing that they do. They are so repetitious that you can anticipate their next move. So if you're prepared for it, then they kind of don't know what to do. And we've been seeing that throughout the state as we're winning battles.
Well, thank God for the Internet. Thank God for thank God for the fact that we have certain talk show hosts and that we can communicate with each other. Because if that were not the case right now, none of this would be going on. It really wouldn't.
It wouldn't. You're absolutely right.
And this is the fight that we've been given with Common Core, and I think it's kind of the urtext of all fights, because long before I ever thought about Common Core, I was sitting around with Mary Graybar, and we were looking at what was happening to school syllabi, and we'd both been through graduate school, which is sort of an insane asylum.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, you know, we were seeing how they were trickling the idea that it was the grad schoolification of kindergarten. That they were trickling these ideological agendas down into the K-12 schools. And by the time we began thinking about and hearing about Common Core, that was just a name for something we'd been worried about for a while.
Right.
And this is just a ramping up of this stuff.
It was the change of a name of a program that started in the 50s and the 60s. The going to the New School of Social Research, man, that was a trip. I got
it. Now, speaking of being in the hell mouth.
How did I ever do that? Why? What was wrong with me? What was I thinking? Oh, my God.
My gosh.
That was a trip. But I learned from there so much. And now one of the things that you learn is that the messaging has to be consistent. So they take the media and Hollywood and school and everything, and they make the messaging always the same. So
right.
You learn to watch. Now you watch TV, and I go back and I watch some of these ridiculous programs, but I like to watch the ones with a plot. So, and you never watch the plot that's up front. You always watch the secondary plot, because that's where the subliminal messaging filters through.
Oh, it really is true. It's, you know, we are so lucky to have people who are explaining this to folks, because it's, you know, it's, I got a degree in English literature, and I always thought I was going to use it every day, and I still do, and I could sit around and read poetry all day long. But what that degree really taught me, and this is what Terrence Moore talks about in The Story Killer, what that degree really taught me was how to interpret text. And every political action is a text.
Good.
And the left has known this for a long time, and they've manipulated it to bad ends. And if we're going to actually fight them on the political battlefields, we're going to have to learn, we have to take our values and our scruples, but we have to learn to fight the way that they fight.
Mm-hmm.
And that is interpreting what they mean, what they say, and what they mean they're saying with issues like education and elections and rights and America. And we have not really been up on that, because I think because of an excess of sincerity, which I certainly hope this movement does not lose.
No,
but, you know,
it wasn't that. It's that what has happened through time is that they have managed to change the definitions of the words. So my generation would learn the words one way. I would say those words to you. I would think you knew that the definition was what I said, but it wasn't. It was something else. So by the time you finished with the conversation, you always had an argument because although you were using the same words, the meanings were different. So that's the first thing that you have to recognize. And then the manipulation of the words is the next thing that you have to get through in recognizing that whatever you think they mean the opposite. And when they say something, they're not fooling. They mean it. When they say, we're going to depopulate the planet, they're not fooling. That's what they're meaning to do, and they're going to do it. Now, it doesn't mean they're going to go out and blow everybody up tomorrow, but it certainly doesn't mean that when some poor kid is starving and whatever, they're going to do anything about it.
Yeah.
They have no desire to. What they have a desire to do is to tell you, make you feel bad, so that we're seeing the same doggy pictures for the last 30 years. Different
right.
music, same pictures.
Al Gore didn't give his television station away to starving kids.
No, not at all. No.
Yeah.
He didn't designate anything for starving children. Well, thank you very much. It has been a wonderful... I didn't realize what time it was.
it's way past my bedtime, Karen. I've got to go to sleep and get up and drive to Georgia tomorrow morning.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm going to give you a call tomorrow because you gave me a couple of ideas that I'd like to pass by you.
Terrific.
And everybody, TinaTrent.com. Please go and follow her blog. Very, very important. Thank you, Tina, for joining me. Everyone, this is American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and on Red State Talk Radio. Please visit our websites, agenda21today.com, americaismyname.org. I'm beginning to forget them. There's so many. But it's wonderful because there's so many. PanhandlePatriots.com, SaveAmerica.com, KarenShone.com, and VoteKarenShone.com. Thank you all for listening. Please share this information with others. It's important. This is it. We don't have a huge window. It's closing very, very quickly. Thank you all for listening. And God bless you. God bless America. And good night. Good night, Tina.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks,
Sally. And thank you
good
all.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Good night, America.